RSN 927 Summer Breakfast.
Could be my last day, Bryce. $100 million on the line again tonight. Good morning.
The jackpot from last week, or a few weeks, a lot of weeks, isn't it?
Yeah.
$100 million. Wow. I know that you every week you, when you buy your ticket, you dream for about an hour, don't you? You must sit in the car when you get back in there and go, what would I do?
Longer than an hour. I do real estate hunting already.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Which house I'd buy, all that sort of stuff.
Where were you going to go?
Maybe somewhere around the Hawthorne area, around there. That's good.
I thought you might have been on a golf course somewhere. Have a few houses, plonk one, you know, maybe down at the National. That'd be nice.
Well, if you win 100.
You can just bring your mates down.
If you win 100, you can just buy a holiday house. You can buy five holiday houses. You can probably buy one over in the US, buy one in England if you like playing golf over there as well, and that'll do me, I reckon. A couple of bases.
Would it be golf for you? That you could do every day?
Yeah, that'd be my 3-4 times a week golf. Geez, it'd be nice getting up in the morning knowing, what have I got to do today? That's right, I've got to play golf if I want to, and that's about it. That's all you got to do for the rest of the day.
But it would give you a chance to be a super dad too.
It would. I tell you what, that was tested again last night. Jeez.
Sticky night for kids, for big kids too.
Yeah, I know. Poor. I know. It was 25 degrees when I left this morning, so still fairly warm outside, about 22 at the moment. And
the humidity.
37.
Yeah, that's going to be savage today, unfortunately, because the humidity will be high because it's just about that drizzly type rain hanging around. So I don't know what that would register on the wet bulb. Should we be using that at the tennis? But I imagine that would be high.
You know, early yesterday, you might not have been up. You were probably enjoying a sleep in, but Hazel and I were talking about moisture measuring devices, and the 12th man came up with the scratometer. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
And it was a good text, I think, from, Chris from Ballarat said, how about that be used at the tennis instead of the wet bulb? Maybe we can use that as the measuring device going forward. So, yes, it's going to be nice and sticky out there today. Anyway, if you win $100 million, you can buy as many air conditioners as you want to cool every part of your life.
You absolutely.
You could probably buy someone to come around with a fan everywhere you go and, cool you down wherever you are in the world.
Surely you wouldn't be wasting this. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Will you buy a ticket?
You can impact a lot of people.
Will you? Oh, but especially yourself.
We're getting a good insight into you here, Mason.
I know. Will you buy a ticket for tonight?
I think I will now. You've got me all excited about what I'd possibly do.
Well, if you don't turn up next week, we know what's happened.
You know exactly what's happened.
What would you do? What's the one thing you'd buy, or the one sporting experience you'd be able to buy your way to?
I'd spend a bit of time in the States. I'm so interested in the sport there. I follow it closely. And I know my son does as well. So it'll be more about sharing those moments with others.
Yep.
George, you'd do the same. There's things we'd just travel. We'd see the world. Yeah. See it inside and out and go everywhere. Not only at the top level, I suppose, and the five-star experience, but also, you know, I'd love to do Kokoda or, you know, a whole heap of things like that that I'd just then have the time to do and do well. I watched the movie Everest with a group recently, and as much as it's scary, and I walked out of that movie and I was as tense as I'd climbed it. My muscles were all, you know, going, I can't believe they're doing this. And unfortunately, people lose their lives doing that. And often it's not often on the way up, but it's on the way coming back down because of weather changes and things like that. But what a movie. And so it just made me think, well, you know, I want to see these things for myself. I want to see what it looks like. I want to have the courage to do that. But some of the passes they did with ladders over crevices, it just dropped down a few hundred metres. You're just gone. Like, if you... And it's a wobbly ladder, horizontal across this thing, and you've got these
windy,
big spikes on your shoes, windy. Oh, I don't know how they do it. I don't think I'd be able to get past the base camp. I'd get to there. That'd be a good milestone, I think.
Yep.
It'd be an incredible milestone, and a lot of people have done that. So things like that, I'd be looking around for a bit of challenge stuff, but a bit of life experience.
That Everest movie, it turns you off attempting to climb any mountains, doesn't it? Jeez.
Yeah.
That's scary stuff.
It was. It had a big impact on me, actually. I ended up studying it then and wanting to know more about it just on my own bat for about a week. And I was looking at it and other climbers and investigating them and the Sherpas and just amazing. Like, just an amazing, challenge. Like, it's incredible challenge that, you know, humans really shouldn't do it. And you just imagine how Sherman Hillary did it.
Oh.
And he basically did it with an old raincoat and a pair of gardening gloves, and away he went. A couple of rickety old wooden ladders, and that's what he did. Like, it's just extraordinary.
What about the little communities that are all the way up on the way to base camp as well? You just got these kids running around at altitude. Geez, that'd be fit kids.
Super fit.
They'd come and play footy and they'd run rings around everyone.
There are a couple of junior footy clubs right now would be going, well, we could recruit them, we'd get them down, and they'd just be running everywhere. No, look, amazing experiences. I love all that stuff of life. I want to go out and find it and smell it, feel it, enjoy it, and enjoy it with others too.
Well, with $100 million, you can do anything you want. Would you buy a private jet? They're about 10.
No, I'm even comfortable getting around with others. I have no qualms with that.
Pointy end, at least.
Yeah, it'll be at the pointy end. One of the funny things, and it's interesting in my trips with Australia and Australia A and things like that, and we don't need any text messages about the fact that I missed the plane one time. That's fine. We've got that. We don't need to revisit old ground. But one of the things that the guys would do, and this shocked me when we were going away with Australia A, you know, there was Simon Kadich and Ashley Nofke and experienced, you know, players who've been around the world. The first thing everyone did when they got up in business class, and they were all plonked in together, so there's rows and rows of it, is pull out the pajamas and get changed. So they're in their pajamas straight away. It was hilarious.
Right in the PJs.
Yeah, it was just hilarious. Blokes are just in their pajamas, and they said, do it. It's the most comfortable thing. I went, all right, okay. So we're all just buzzing around in our Qantas pajamas. It was hilarious. But they're just big kids. They're just like the guys at your local cricket club, only playing for where the stakes are just a touch higher.
The days of Instagram, that would have been interesting back then. Imagine a photo of the Aussie boys in their PJs.
Yeah, jumping around, playing the fool, before the takeoff. You're going to have to sit down. Yeah, okay, righto. You know, they're all just, everyone's excited like kids, their first flight, you know, going up to Sydney or Adelaide or something like that. Yeah, a bunch of big kids we were. Yeah.
Fantastic. I won't have to race. Yesterday I had to race into Aldi because there was a rocking chair there on special, and which is very handy at the moment to get the little man to sleep. But the if I win $100 million, won't obviously have to run in for the bargains at Aldi. Jeez, it's vicious, that. That's a sport in itself. Bolting in the front door, trying to get these chairs. I went to 3 Aldis.
Oh, really?
Wife went to another one. Missed out on all of them. And then, luckily, one of them had them in Glen Waverley, so I had to head over there to get my chair. But that is unbelievable. That is a sight to behold.
They have some popular items.
They do. They've got some popular... it's a very fast customers as well.
Yeah, jeez. Straight away, 8 o'clock a.m. They're waiting at the front of the cage of the store, and up goes the shutter, and broop, they're in there.
Half an hour before.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen it with the kids' toys, and this is one of the greatest toys of all time. It's a wooden train set, and my son had one when we were living in Denmark for a couple of years, and we just lay on the floor for hours and hours just with this wooden train set. It was 2 years old, and it created this unbelievable connection. It wasn't so much about playing with the train set, but it was more about the connection we got of just doing these things and sharing time and asking questions and, you know, just playing together. It was really good. So I've given that as a gift to a number of people. So sorry if you're just about to have a kid. That'll probably be the gift.
Getting the wooden
transit. But those things, people go in for those wooden toys, and they're Scandinavian, you know, origin.
Yeah.
But boy, oh boy, is it aggressive in there. They're boom, gone. Oh, wow. And, you know, the trolley's blocking you and all this sort of stuff. So you can be walking. They know where you're going, and they can arm their trolley and just guide you down another aisle, and you can't get to things. And it can be aggressive in there at Aldi. It was the same with some fitness gear as well. I saw every personal trainer going in getting medicine balls, and they're filling their trolley full of them. Like, they were selling stuff like that. They're a beauty, Aldi.
No, they are good.
What was your experience?
Well, you didn't get shoved around, did you?
No,
I was about fifth, sixth in line. Bang, back of the queue. People sprinted in. That was it. No good.
So what, did they have half a dozen on show?
Yeah, not many. Three or four at each shop. So you had to be there very early. Unfortunately, we've got a radio show to do, so I couldn't get there till about 8:45 in the city, and then had to bolt back here for work. Jeez, I tell you what, that is on. the race. It's there's some very scary individuals there.
They know what they want.
Especially some elderly people who, you know, I've never seen run before, but geez, they get their skates on.
Oh, right. The elderly, I thought it was some exhausted mums there going, well, I've got to do something to get this child to sleep. We need to rock this baby off.
Yeah. That's a good little rocking chair. But
do you have to put it together?
Well, no. Now, this is the other thing. I think maybe one of the reasons they get them cheap is it's terribly packaged. It's done. It's in the box. Ready to go.
Ready to sit on it.
Yeah, which is not ideal for trying to get it in your car.
How does it? It must be big.
Huge. The box was like an L shape with the rocking chair seat bit at the bottom. And then, yeah, that was another challenge, trying to get it in the car. So I had to ditch the box. So
it was like a Tetris.
Yeah, it was.
Tetris game trying to get the rocking chair into the back of the car.
Just ridiculous. And when you got golf clubs in the back too, after you were planning on playing golf that day, not a good, it was a good game of Tetris, but not a good surprise in the morning. But we got there in the end and the rocking chair's at home and it was in good use last night. Plenty of action taking place in the Australian Open and the man who joins us every morning throughout the tournament is Craig Gabriel. Craig, good morning.
Andrew, morning. And I've seen parts of Melbourne that I had seen before but didn't need to see on this trip.
Right. More taxi drivers. Jeez. Where did you go? Were you coming from around the Melbourne Park precinct?
No. From near the Flinders Street station.
Yep.
And the studio is on Elizabeth Street.
It's not that hard. You wouldn't have thought.
No. So I'm just around in that sort of area.
Yep.
So this driver has gone up to Parliament, past the Windsor Hotel.
Right.
And at once I said, where are you going? You cannot turn on Elizabeth Street. I said, yes, you can. So I said to it, I got out, I said, next time, don't take somebody on the scenic route. The fare was 13 yesterday. Today it's 20.
Well, there you go. Always is a good man for the station, saving some money, getting the most direct route.
Very thoughtful.
Now, we've had a few conversations this morning about the tennis crowds.
Yep.
And they are the most... The Australian... I don't know what it's like overseas,
yep,
but Australian Open crowds, it's funny because you have the fanatics, and that's sort of not what we get known for, but people associate that with the
Australian
Open.
And I think they've gone past their use-by date, but go on.
Thank you. No, that's... I just wanted confirmation on that. So we've had another text message here. We're not alone, Bryce. This is the latest text message from Damien. I couldn't agree more, re-tennis crowds and the fanatics. Do tennis crowds everywhere act the same? Does everyone laugh when someone drops a towel or takes a catch in the crowd? Or is that uniquely Australian?
No, I can't say I've picked up on that. Where I always find that people start to have a bit of a snigger or a giggle or a laugh is when the ball gets stuck in the net on a serve. They think, that's very funny.
And it's not, really.
No!
The ball's just stuck in the net.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're easily entertained.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But no, not on that score. I think generally the Australian crowds are pretty good. The New York crowds are shocking.
Are they?
Yeah.
So why? What's different?
You're telling me to shut up? You're telling me to keep quiet? Who are you talking to? Because they just want to make a noise and move because they think they're at a baseball game or something like that. The French crowds and the Italian crowds are impatient, especially the Italian crowds. They start throwing coins on the court.
Really?
Yes.
Jeez.
I mean, in the days of the lira, it didn't matter. It was worth nothing. The French crowds also are not that patient. You know, they hate to have a player question a call or speak to a chair.
Just get on with it. Come on. Yeah, get on with the game.
It's hysterical.
Impatient at the French Open.
Oh, no. You know, they start on with that.
Right.
And in London, you know, if there's a question, call. Oh, I say, do carry on.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So we're not as bad as we think we are.
No, we're not that bad.
All right.
And the Japanese ones are extremely polite.
Yes, no, I can
very
imagine.
Very polite.
And they'd be on time, everything there.
Absolutely.
Clockwork. Let's talk about the Aussies. I want to start, apart from Diminor and Barty getting through yesterday, let's talk about Kimberly Birrell.
Yes.
What a fantastic story for her.
Priceless.
World number 240, awarded a wild card. As mentioned, we spoke to her a couple of weeks on the show to discuss her journey, a couple of weeks ago, rather, on the show, to talk about her journey, and it has been a fantastic one, and a young one at that. Mm. And for her to beat the Croatian Vekic, that's a big scalp for her.
It is, and it's a seeded scalp.
Yeah.
I mean,
29th.
Yeah, 29th. Okay, not one of the top 16, but the fact is she's playing well enough to have been seeded in the top 32. So that is a huge result. That's going to provide her, I would hope, with a fair amount of confidence and a bank balance cushion. But it was very funny. She said, you know, it'll help at ranking points and all that. She said, I'll be able to buy a car and not have to share the one car we have with my mother. She picks up $155,000 for this so far. And we'll see what happens. She's got Angie Kerber in the next round. That's a different kettle of fish, a lefty, the experience. But savor this, you know, enjoy this. Don't just think, oh, I've got to start thinking about the next match. Yes, of course you do. But this is the biggest moment of your young career. Milk it for everything. Enjoy every moment of this. And that is really a lovely story. When you consider what she's been through a year off the tour with the right elbow surgery and all that. Very nice.
That was the thing that came out of the interview a couple of weeks ago when we spoke to her, was the struggle that she's had getting her body right at such a young age.
Yes.
I know a lot of tennis players go through it, and it is getting miles into the legs, but she was literally not able to compete for a year.
No, exactly right.
Which is extraordinary.
Absolutely extraordinary. You know, she was born in Germany.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
no.
Born in, I think, Dusseldorf. Her father was a tennis coach there.
Yep.
And then they moved back to Australia. I think she was about 3 years old, took a position at Pat Cash's academy in Queensland. Then they moved to the academy that he's now managing.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of close contact with Sam Stosur.
We're also going to talk to Chris Marnie, her other coach from up there in Queensland, a little later on in the show. So looking forward to talking a little bit more about Kimberly Birrell then. What about... We'll chat now about Ash Barty and Alex Dimonor. We might start with Ash Barty.
Yep.
She was fantastic. Straight
Wonderful.
Sets. Almost clinical, what you'd expect from a top 5 or 10 player.
Yeah, absolutely. I was doing the ball-by-ball commentary on that match during for Australian Open Radio. And she went through the first set so comfortably. But, you know, just reeling off game after game. She was down a break in the second set, and I think it was 5 games in a row to close out the match. And, she was impressive. Wang Yafan, I think, obviously was suffering nerves and on that big stage, etc. But Ash was superb.
Interesting you say about nerves. Like this, there is a bit of pressure on Ash Barty now, but she seems to be taking it in her stride and performing well. And like Maisie was just saying about a top 10 player, they've got gears. Like they get challenged and then it's no, not now, not on this, and they just take off.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been impressive.
Look, you're saying about nerves and a bit of pressure. I don't think it affects Ash.
Yeah.
He's got that type of personality, that easygoing, oh yeah, it'll be right. Let's get on with it. And this is where she reminds me so much of Yvonne Goolagong. Yvonne and I grew up together, same club, and so, you know, I've known her a long time, but nothing bothered Yvonne. Yeah. Nothing troubled her at all, and that's what I see with Ash Barty. Mm. She just takes it in her stride. Yeah, okay, I lost that point, get on with the next one.
She now plays Maria Sakkari from Greece.
One of her good friends.
Round of 32. The thing about Ash, it's almost like her tennis, that relaxed style. From the outside, it's like she's not consumed by tennis. It's a job. She goes to do it. She doesn't stress about it. It doesn't take over her life. Is that a true reflection of her off the court as well?
Yeah, I would say so. And that's where that time away from the sport has helped. When she went off and played cricket. And she's made this very point also in that if she hadn't done that, if she hadn't just decided it was all getting to her and she needed to get away from it, who knows where she would have been now in that not playing at this level. She would have had burnout and probably left the sport for good.
Yeah. Do you think we'll see more people maybe think about taking a break away from the game at a young age? Because she was very good, very young, and had a lot of hype when she was 16, 17. But it's done her the world of good. Will we see that maybe more where people take even 3 months off, a short break from the game?
Well, I think players have got to schedule their year and their careers and be smart about it. Konta has commented not that long ago that she's been suffering burnout and said that she needs to, when she starts to feel that, she's got to take breaks from the game. But you know what, Andrew, gets back to the point that I was making a couple of days ago. Do other things. Find other interests. Get that escape from the grind of training on and off the court, gyms, practice, matches. Look for something else that's going to give you an interest, and that was probably, I would say, going to help you enjoy what you're doing, your job, your career, and what you love to do normally, without getting stressed and burnt out with it.
And you had this balance as well, Bryce, when you were playing cricket, because you'd come from a professional background before cricket. So you've had that experience quite similarly to Ash Barty, being away from the game, still playing it, obviously, at a local level. But yeah. That mental refreshment, what does that do?
Well, I think what it does is create this worldly thoughts to what you do. There's more out there than what you're just focusing single-handedly on. And we see a lot of athletes improve when they have children because they just have another focus. They don't get home, sit on the couch and stew about the game that they've just done. Footballers in particular, where there's so much contact and aggression involved. But once they have kids, they have this great balance and they become consistent performers. And I think it has a... To be worldly and to think beyond what you're doing just for a profession, particularly sport, I think that really helps a lot, helps with the mindset. One of the things last night, Alex Dimeneur on prime time, did he suffer a few nerves there in the middle? Like, it's a challenging game. He looked like he'd shot out of the cannon and had won the first couple of sets, and things just seemed to tighten up for him.
Well, Laaksonen picked things up and threw in a bit of a challenge at that stage. There were a couple of moments where I was thinking, like, Alex, just calm down a little bit. He was getting quite fired up and a bit frustrated with himself.
Yeah.
But, you know, he is such class, and he was able to control that and bring himself back in. And, you know, I liked the way he came back in that final set because he was a breakdown at the beginning of the final set and he worked his way back in. I think it was the first four games or something. It might have been three service breaks or something. So to stay focused on that, I think showed a lot of maturity.
What about the way he uses his emotions? We saw them on show last night.
Yeah.
Maybe more than most other matches that we've seen him play.
It got tight.
It did, yeah. And do you think that he has... It's almost like he's addressed how to use them in a positive way as well, because through those middle sets, he was able to turn it around in the final set and keep his composure, whereas other players at that same critical point in a match might lose it upstairs.
Well, there was no racket throwing or racket smashing or hitting a ball into the stands or anything like that. And, I mean, there was some shouting and screaming on his part. I think eventually... that helped him relax. He just got rid of some of that frustration by doing that. He was able to come back. That was a lot of maturity there.
I don't know what Leighton Hewitt's record was overall in five setters, but whenever you were watching Leighton as a supporter, it felt like the longer the match went, the more confidence you had that he was going to win. I get that same feeling with Alex Dimeneur. I don't know whether it's because he's spoken a lot about the fitness, the preseason he's done, the amount of work he's put in. Do you get that feeling with him watching him?
Well, with Hewitt, I think it was a case of a siege mentality.
Yeah.
He was going to, you know, fight it out on everything. And to some degree, yes, I see that in Dimeneur, but I don't think it's like a siege mentality. He's going to keep fighting. It's not that sort of, do I want to say, nasty aggression. It's there's controlled aggression in there, and I think he's more in tune with what he's actually doing. I just thought he was very mature. He's 19, he's 20 in a few weeks' time, and that is a very good positive sign. To be in a commanding position, lose that control, and then still work back.
The match that I probably was most watched last night was John Millman, who fought back from two sets to love down, saved four match points in the fourth set tiebreaker. He was amazing, but unfortunately just ran out of gas in that last set, and as soon as he lost his serve, wasn't able to break back, unfortunately. How would you describe, what would he be thinking this morning about his 2019 Australian Open?
I think he was asked about what positives, and he said, oh, not really, none. Because he saw he had those chances to do it, and I so wanted him to win. And it was so close. Yeah, he'll wake up this morning feeling a bit peed off and frustrated and disappointed, but he also is so much like Ash. These things are not going to linger. And, you know, when he sits back, he'll you know, do an evaluation, and I think you'll find the positives and show how close you are. But what about, I mean, you've got to credit Bautista Agut as well.
Oh, amazing.
I mean, he's been the marathon man of the tournament. Both his first two matches, he's down, he's up two sets to love, and ends up going five and ends up winning.
I wonder about the mindset, too, with the tiebreak change.
Yeah.
When you get to the fifth set, at least you know you're only going to be there until six or seven games. I wonder if that would be interesting to talk to the players about that, whether there's a shift anymore, because sometimes it felt like in previous years they'd set themselves for the fifth set marathon and we were buckling in for a long night. But now knowing that it will finish with a tiebreak at six all.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Possibly. But I think also you get into the fifth set and you're really not thinking that far ahead. You're just thinking of trying to get through that and you know, stamp your authority early on with a break, etc., and not have to get into something long and drawn out.
Before we get onto one of the big names going out of the tournament yesterday, we'll just finish on the Aussies. Matty Ebden last night against Rafael Nadal. That was a bridge too far for him to climb, unfortunately. Very tough match against Nadal, and
incredibly,
he was taught a lesson, really, wasn't he? On
yeah, 3-2 and 2. Yeah. That is a bit of a drubbing.
Yeah.
But I think Rafa must be wondering, what do I do to get away from the Australians?
Yes.
Yeah. He's probably
he's a magnet. Yeah.
What? Got three in the first three rounds of the Australian Open. He said yesterday it's a Davis Cup
Absolutely. It is. So, yeah, look, that was a good performance from Rafa. I mean, as I think I also said yesterday, Matty Ebden is not going to stop trying. He's going to give it everything he's got. But, yeah, you're right. Bridge too far.
Jordan Thompson against Andreas Seppi as well from Italy. Went down in straight sets.
I thought that would have been tighter. Yeah. I thought that could have been a bit more of a closer contest and pressure on Seppi, but no, Seppi produced the goods.
The two other women who went down yesterday for the Aussies, Zoe Hives and Astra Sharma, losing to Caroline Garcia and Maria Sakkari, respectively. A little bit of the same there, both out in straight sets, but they're both young at the start of their careers.
Very inexperienced.
A lot of work to do.
Yeah. Look, and this is a stepping stone, new careers. So they'll learn from that. There's no two ways. Yeah, but never expected to win.
Let's head to one of the big names yesterday who is now out of the competition in Kevin Anderson.
Yeah.
Amazing upset.
That took me by surprise because going into this match, their record was 3-0 to Anderson.
Yeah.
I'm not knocking Tiafoe's game or him as a player, but Kevin has been playing so well that I really thought he would take it to Tiafoe and come through as a winner. And he started well, winning the first set. He was getting treatment on the inner elbow of his right arm a few times. But look, credit to Tiafoe, but I'm disappointed for Kevin.
Tell us about Tiafoe. I don't really know a lot about him as an American.
Yeah, he's the son of immigrants from West Africa, and the father took a job at a tennis club.
Okay,
I think was it the New York area or the Delaware area or something like that, and that's how he got into it. I think originally from Senegal.
Mm-hmm.
And he's developed, and the USTA have been watching him and encouraging him and giving him the support, he's been a member of their Davis Cup squad. He was included in the Laver Cup last year, so he won his first career title last February, March. He's got the goods. Whether he's going to go all the way, I'm not sure. He could be in that sort of, have a bit of a burst, but in that Jack Sock, John Isner, Sam Querrey level.
Yep. I did find the comments. Jamie Murray spoke yesterday about Andy Murray's farewell from the Australian Open and the dedication video and everything, and he said, I think we need to remember he still hasn't quite announced his retirement.
He hasn't stopped.
He said he found it quite strange, actually, the reception that he got.
The way Andy had been speaking here.
No, I know.
I mean, but now it's sort of like throwing a cat among the pigeons as to what is he going to do? You know, is he going to bring out a pair of crutches and try to play at Wimbledon? The groundsman won't be happy with that, what?
Well, there was a bit of that. Fly the ointment right at the end, yeah. where he goes, you know, I might be even here next year.
Yes.
And we went, oh, come on, Andy, seriously.
John Farnham.
Yes, exactly. He'll be here again next year. Hopefully he will be, because he is great to watch. Now, a few of the Aussies in action today. Alexi mm-hmm. Popperin, he mm-hmm. takes on Dominic Thiem. This is going to be tough. Melbourne Arena or... now, before we get quickly onto that, 1573 Arena, you said it was a drink, isn't mm-hmm. it? What drink is it?
I think it's a slight alcoholic beverage from China.
Well, it's China. I get that.
Yeah. You see all the Chinese characters around the whole court. I can't. I'm in China a lot, but I can't say I've tried it.
Well, there you go. That's what you'll have to do for us when you're in China this year.
Bring a sample back.
Yeah, a 1573. We won't try it on air, but maybe later in the day. Well, she's been one of the stars of this Women's Big Bash League season, and we've been trying to catch her for a little while now, and she joins us on the line. Grace Harris from the Brisbane Heat, who's had such an outstanding season, joins us. Grace, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Up nice and early in Queensland. What about your season this year? Could you have expected your improvement to occur at such a rapid rate at the start of the season?
No, I didn't really go in with any expectations, to be honest, other than just having a bit of fun and playing a bit of cricket with my mates. But, no, it took me a bit by surprise. It's been a good year, but, you know, you have them, and then you have your bad years as well. So, I don't know, feel pretty good.
In terms of the off-season, did you do anything differently this year in the preparation for the WBBL?
Not really. So I just kind of come in and continue to work a little bit harder on my strengths and I guess my bowling's coming along nicely, working with Wayne Niven. Nivo's done a lot for me in the off season, so just getting it, knowing about where to set fields or I don't know, like, what to bowl to a certain batter when they're starting to target you. And with my batting, I've been working a lot with Scotty Prestbridge, and he's just working on a lot of... He already knows I'm strong enough, so we're not so much working on all the trick shots and being able to score 360 or whatever, because you do that naturally, but he works a lot with me batting on instinct, so that's what I just got to go back to. And just... I'm probably a bit more naturally talented than some people. Like, they have to work really hard to be able to play some of the shots that I play. But I'm just trying to stick at it and just keep chatting to Scotty P on how to best get the best out of myself, I guess.
Before we get stuck into your batting more, I want to talk about your bowling, because it has been a feature this Women's Big Bash League season. You've picked up numerous wickets in a number of innings so far. Tell us about your bowling craft and your mindset there. You spoke about talking about field placings and what sort of balls to bowl. Do you make that decision? Is it all planned before the game? Do you know certain tactics of different batters out there? How do you go about that thinking about the game as a bowler?
Well, so most of it's planned before the game. Analysts kind of go through every batter's innings that we verse, and then they decide where their strength is, like over cover or over mid-wicket and whatnot. And then they find out the balls that they get out on a lot, and then I try and bowl in that kind of channel to get them out. And generally, it just gets them ones or twos, and if you bowl a bad ball, then you just own it. But I think in the past, we've always kind of just set fields for bad balls and not good cricket shots. And I think this year we're setting more fields for just simply our stop balls and our the ball that we want to bowl. So whether if mine's a slower ball, I probably want my field a bit squarer or a bit straighter, depending on the wicket and the player. So, yeah, we just we adapt to each individual, I guess, and it's not just a curtain kind of, I mean, just a blanket kind of, you know, process, or oh, I just have a five on the leg side just simply because I'm an off-spin bowler to a right-hander, but,
yep.
You know, they play every ball through the off-sides, and it doesn't make sense, but...
What do you get more joy out of, Grace, smashing a six or actually having a field set and that plan and the plan actually coming off and getting a wicket? What's a better feeling?
Smash a six. That's good. It's like I've just started, I guess for this year I've kind of thought more about cricket or thought more about my cricket.
Yep.
But with my batting, I probably need to think less about cricket, and bowling, I can think more about cricket because I find I keep getting out thinking about cricket when I'm batting, whereas I just need to go back to natural, just see the ball and hit it, and I'm good as gold.
Plenty of US sport over the next few weeks, and it's almost the biggest couple of weeks in US sport with the Super Bowl on the 4th of February. Duncan Mackenzie-McCarg is normally a long way away. We're good enough to have him in the studio today. Duncan, good morning.
G'day, guys.
Welcome home.
Bryce, amazing. Yeah, thank you so much. It's always great to be in Melbourne this time of year, isn't it? Obviously, with the Australian Open going on at the moment. Obviously, I'm presenting at the AO, and it's just a great time to be around Melbourne Park. Guys, if you haven't been to the tennis this year, it is bigger, it is better, there's so much to look at. It's basically turned into almost like a festival, yeah, rather than a sporting event. It's just incredible. You go to Grand Slam City, it's just a visual delight, and there's just not an inch of space where Tennis Australia has sort of mapped out where they could do an activation or something really cool. So there's something for everybody. It's amazing. Mm.
Duncan's just got his job for next year as well. Good stuff out there.
Yeah, for sure. Got to get him happy.
I want to ask about tennis in the US. I don't know if you've been to any, but is there a different attitude towards tennis over in the US than in Australia, or is it one of those niche things that for 2 weeks when the US Open rolls around, everyone gets interested in it?
It's a very good question. I mean, they have a lot of the Master Series events, and obviously they've got the US Open at Flushing Meadows. But I think, you know, American tennis is sort of going through a bit of a down period at the moment. At the moment, has for quite some time now, ever since we lost our Andy Roddick. But I think it's one of these things where it's still fairly niche, especially during the American summer. It certainly picks up when they've got Master Series events in Cincinnati, and obviously got the US Open. But yeah, at the moment, it's certainly a bit of a down period. It's probably a little bit niche, but I get the feeling that it's only a matter of time before we're going to see another American superstar sooner rather than later. Obviously, we've got a lot of this Eastern European contingent coming through and really dominating the game, but it's certainly a matter of time before we have another American rising up the ranks.
So if Jack Sock was walking down Fifth Avenue, yeah, would people recognize him?
No. They certainly wouldn't, and especially Jack, who has just been going terribly. I mean, yeah, the last 14 months.
Maybe John Isner, who's 7'9".
Yeah, I think we would all recognise John. I mean, he's one of the great guys of tennis as well. But yeah, just on Jack Sock, I mean, he's almost fallen off a cliff the last 14 months. I mean, he was ranked in the top 10, and all of a sudden, ever since he made that ATP World Tour Finals, he's really just gone downhill.
Yeah, bit of a road back for Jack Sock. Mm. Let's head to the NFL. Bryce and I were all over this earlier in the week. It's actually very good timing for us in Breakfast Radio with it on throughout the Monday morning. And I tell you what, we do get a bit distracted at times as well. Now, the conference championships have now been
decided
with the Saints playing the Rams and the Chiefs playing the Patriots. Mm-hmm. I want to start with the story of Tom Brady. It's one we talk about a lot, but if he was to get this Patriots team to the Super Bowl and win it, where would that go down in his list of career achievements, which is bloody long?
Very, very good question. Well, five-time Super Bowl champion. I mean, he's played in all sorts of teams. I mean, this New England Patriots team is aging, and they've been written off pretty much since, what, maybe a month ago, 6 weeks ago, when they had those back-to-back losses. They had that loss in Miami and that crazy finish with Rob Gronkowski not making that tackle. But, I mean, with that 41-28 win over the LA Chargers, I mean, they've sort of re-announced themselves as real contenders again. And they've got themselves into that position where they're in an AFC championship game. They've got to go to Kansas City, Missouri. They've got to go to Arrowhead Stadium and take on the Kansas City Chiefs. And, yeah, in terms of Brady and getting this aging group, I mean, I think he probably thinks in his mind that it'd be one of his greatest achievements, because I know that he was quoted on record after that game effectively saying, everybody thinks we suck and can't win any games. I tell you what, we're looking forward to next week. So, I mean, New England, they're a bit like the Collingwood of the AFL. I mean, everyone loves to hate them. You're either with them or against them.
Okay.
Yeah, I tell you what, this interesting situation with Tom Brady and Philip Rivers. Every time Philip Rivers, the quarterback for the LA Chargers, comes up against Tom Brady, he loses. He's played him 8 times for 8 losses. So Philip is going to be having nightmares about Tom in the offseason. I can't wait for this game to begin. I think it's certainly the pick of the 2 games.
Did it surprise you, though, that the Patriots, the way they jumped out of the blocks, like they really just blew them away and didn't give them a chance?
Yeah, absolutely. Their offensive line was very, very strong, wasn't it? And, you know, they've just got some great attacking weapons. I mean, it's one of these things where if you give Tom Brady some time and space in the pocket, he's going to find people. So it's, I think this New England Patriots team might actually go to Kansas City and beat the Chiefs. I think that they've got the playoff experience. I think Brady and Belichick know what to do in these situations. The Chiefs have been very, very impressive, even without Kareem Hunt. But it comes down to pressure. And a lot of the time in the history, the Chiefs haven't been that strong at Arrowhead during the playoffs. So it's going to come down to who can handle it.
Do you think that weighs on players, that past history of teams?
I think it just depends who you are. I mean, some people read newspapers, some people are historians, some people love to look at the facts, and others probably just block it out. I mean, it's just one of these ones where this Chiefs team, through Andy Reid, they're a very tight unit. They've got Tyreek Hill, they've got Travis Kelce, they've got some very, very good attacking weapons themselves. So I think it's probably going to be a shootout. And on the other hand, you've got the MVP favourite in Patrick Mahomes, who's just been the story of the NFL this season, really.
Now, for those, I know we've followed him lots with you, but for those who are just catching up on Patrick Mahomes, tell us about his story and his dad as well, who played a completely different sport.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, his dad was a baseballer, and obviously Patrick Mahomes, he's one of these guys who was a pretty heavily sort of first round pick, but he's one of these guys where he's quite an unassuming kind of guy, and he was the backup quarterback to Alex Smith last year, and obviously Alex got traded to the Washington Redskins at the end of last season, and then Mahomes was sort of thrown into the spotlight, and basically as a first season starter, but really in his second year, he has just totally thrived in this position, and he's sort of become the preeminent quarterback of the NFL in just his first year as a starter, which is quite incredible. And then you've got veterans like Aaron Rodgers being asked, just how good is this guy? And then Rodgers is saying, he reminds me of a young me, which is just the ultimate compliment for a 23-year-old playing effectively in his first season. So, yeah, he's one of these guys who's, he's just got brilliant hand-eye coordination. He's got a cannon of an arm. He's one of these guys who can throw no-look passes. And he's got a very, very good head on his shoulders. And I think his future is going to be so, so bright.
That is exciting stuff. The other game, the Saints and the Rams, Maisie was really interested in how exciting the... Was it the Rams, the way they celebrated, or was that the Saints?
The New Orleans.
After their win, they really turned it on. They beat the Eagles 20-14 last week, or earlier in the week, and they, rather than just having the boom box going, so every change room has that, but they had the lights, the smoke machine. It was just a flat out. It was a nightclub. It was unbelievable.
Is that what you guys have after each show here?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Just down
lights,
the road,
the smoke machine.
Turn off all the lights at the local cafe and just get pumping.
I tell you what, guys, being on the ground in the US and you get around the locker rooms and you see the way in which these guys operate pre-game, post-game, that they are different types of individuals. I mean, the way in which they get into... I mean, everyone's got a big Beats headphones set on. Everyone gets into the groove in their own different way. And the way in which they party and celebrate is completely different to what our cricket team would do or an AFL team would do. If you get the chance to try and get an accreditation before an NFL or an NBA game, make sure you head into the locker rooms, because there's just all sorts of nonsense going on.
Because we don't often get let in the inner sanctum, even from a TV perspective, with AFL, or AFL being better over the last couple of years. But the access you get to see, like, imagine seeing a party from the Aussie cricket team after they won the Ashes 5-0. I mean, we'd never get access to
that. I'm thinking back to Steve Waugh when he was in charge. There'd be Hey True Blue just coming out of the...
That'd be different.
Coming out of the wireless. And,
sure.
And this is just this heaving nightclub and blokes jumping around. And, oh, well, you've got to celebrate your success and they do it better than most.
If you've been to New Orleans, it reminds me of New Orleans at about... 4 a.m. in the morning on Bourbon Street.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very similar.
Yeah, I mean, the Saints are one of these teams where they've sort of taken over the favoritism from the Rams halfway through the season, and they've just been running with it. And obviously, you've got the veteran quarterback, Drew Brees, who will be a Hall of Famer, coming up against the young quarterback in Jared Goff. So, and he's really been leading that line from the get-go. So the Rams have been sort of the X factor of the NFL for the last two seasons. Who knows how good they are there? This very, very strong offensive team. And then you've got New Orleans Saints, who underneath Drew Brees are a very tight unit as well. So I really can't wait for these two games to begin. It's going to be one of the great weekends of US sport.
Bought my mate a Drew Brees signed jersey at the start of the year. He's a big Saints fan. And tell you what, that might just double in value. Might have to get back from him and sell it back to him after a couple of weeks' time if they go through and play in the Super Bowl. Mm. Before we get there, we've got the Pro Bowl. Now... Mm. What's the interest like? This is the All-Star game.
Yeah.
What is the interest like in America? Is it pretty much the interest we get here with, or we used to get with State of Origin, where it's dwindling and on its way out? Or is it something that people still look forward to the week before the Super Bowl?
It's like the E.J. Witten Legends game. No. It's not as low profile as that. I think it's one of these ones where everyone's keeping an eye on the following week, the Super Bowl. So you don't have, arguably, you know, two of the best... teams in the Pro Bowl itself. I mean, obviously, if Patrick Mahomes, I mean, he would be starting in the Pro Bowl. And if he is playing in the Super Bowl, and he still won't be playing in the Pro Bowl now because there's just not enough time. But it's just one of these things where people keep a passing interest in it. I mean, for us here in Australia, we have got a big interest in it this year because we've got Michael Dixon from the Seattle Seahawks, who's had one of the great rookie seasons here in the NFL as a punter. I mean, he's been revolutionising the way in which he punts, the way in which he drop kicks the ball. I mean, we saw him in that playoff game where he had to practice drop kicking field goals because the kicker was injured. I mean, it's one of these things where I think there's going to be a lot of interest in Michael, and I'm sure the Pro Bowl will give him probably a license to do something kind of cool and different. So keep an eye on the Pro Bowl and Michael Dixon.
Chris Marnie, who's joined us on the line. Chris, good morning, and how proud are you waking up the day after?
Morning, guys. Yeah, fantastic day for Kim yesterday and for women's tennis in Australia in general.
We spoke to Kim a couple of weeks ago when she was awarded the wild card on the show, and she discussed the hard run she's had over the last couple of years with injury. Talk to us about what it's like to be coaching her in that situation where she's had so many struggles with her body at such a young age as well.
Yeah, mate, she was going along pretty well. In 2016, she made her debut here against Pliskova, and then shortly after got represented, chosen to represent Australia in the Fed Cup. So she was only 17 at that stage and things were looking pretty bright. And then she had to have a pretty serious elbow operation that put her out of the game for a full 12 months for the rest of 2016 and 2017. So it's taken her a while. You know, it's probably taken her 12 to 18 months to really get back to the level that we all knew she was capable of and she was expecting of herself. But she had a great group of people around her and her parents and Brett Hunter, one of the other coaches from TA that's done a lot of travel with our girls. So it's really good to see Kim back on this stage.
Chris, great to be talking to you this morning, the morning after Kim's great performance yesterday. Has that, as much as it's a setback and the injury and it's difficult to overcome, has it built some great characteristics of champions, I suppose, like a bit of resilience and a bit of patience as well?
Yeah, I think it has. They asked Kim those questions yesterday and she said she never thought there was a time when she wouldn't play tennis again, but she, you know, the thoughts entered her mind about how long it would take her to get back to this stage and where she wanted to be. So I think definitely taking time away from the sport that you love makes you appreciate it a bit more and probably build some of those personal qualities even more.
In terms of your coaching and talking to Kim about playing someone like Donna Vekic, what are your instructions? Because there is such a discrepancy in the rankings. Is it almost go out there and enjoy yourself because it's a free hit? Or are there certain things you want to get out of every time Kim takes the court at the moment?
Yeah, look, I think there's always a couple of tactical things you want the players to try to execute under pressure, but a lot of it's about confidence. Kim's had a couple of top 50 wins this summer now, including a top 10 win against Kazakhtina in Brisbane. So yeah. She plays a pretty powerful game. She's able to dictate a lot of points. So for her, a lot of it is going out and just being able to execute her own game style, and then around that, maybe just trying to do one or two things that put the opposition in a little bit of trouble.
What would they be? She comes up against the second seed Angelique Kerber today. Oh, sorry, tomorrow. What are those things that you've scoped out about Kerber that she might be able to unlock with her game?
Yeah, that's certainly going to be a challenging one. Angie's one of the best players in the world and won this tournament before. So we'll sit down today, Brett and I, and have a look at some footage of Kerber and see if we can find one or two ways that, you know, that Kim can try to have some success. She's got a doubles match today, so we'll get through that this morning and then take a look at tomorrow's matchup.
What does it do for her year as well, Chris? Because I think a lot of people don't realise how tough life is on the tennis tour when you're ranked outside the top 20 or the top 50 in the world. It is a constant challenge, and also finances are very difficult to come by. What does this base give her for 2019?
Yeah, look, I think her ranking moves to about 140 or 150, and she started the summer to 270 or 280, so it's been a big rise for her in the last 3 weeks. So that's going to certainly help her financially, but also schedule-wise, in the next couple of months, we'll have to sit down and look at that at the end of this tournament and see what it means for her, because the higher they rank, the better the tournaments they can get in. So we had a tentative schedule mapped out for her for the next couple of months, but we'll have to see if that changes at all based on where she ends up.
I dare say it might be changing a little bit, Chris. You might have to have a few more entries in the diary.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, we'll have a look at that.
One team that did get back on track, though, were the Melbourne Victory. Fantastic to see them. Really well done on the weekend against the Newcastle Jets, and had to back it up midweek as well. And 5, they put past Brisbane Roar, if you don't mind at all. One man who's played in every position except a record keeper is Lee Broxham, and he joins us on the line now from the Melbourne Victory. Lee, good morning and welcome to RSN 927.
Hey, guys, how are we?
Just taking the mick, have you ever put the gloves on in training, Lee? Because you've played every other position.
Oh, I'm mucking around to have a few times, but not quite yet.
Can't quite shift the big head of Lawrence Thomas out of there at training. In terms of the win, first of all, on the weekend at Amy Park, it was a good 2-1 victory. I don't think you guys played your best all game, but then to click like you did on Wednesday, you must be really proud of how that came together.
Yeah, I mean, it was, sometimes football's not pretty, and sometimes you've got to get results in a successful season, and that's something that happened on the Saturday, and we kind of just say after the game, you're not going to remember the performance at the end of the year, you'll remember the result, it'll be on paper. And yeah, in Brisbane it was to and fro a little bit in the first half, and then we kind of just turned it on a bit in the second half, and the boys up front, the quality that they have, really showed. So, it's great when you've got players like that that can turn a result on its head really quickly like that. So, it's very pleasing.
We've certainly got a whole team full of those, Lee. Great to be talking with you this morning. Yep. Is this a stronger position that you've ever felt with Melbourne Victory? You're the current champions. Compared to last season, are you in a better position now?
Yeah, well, if you recall back to last year, we were, I think, early Feb we were, we were struggling to pick up points, and we're coming into our Champions League campaign as well. So it was a bit all hands on deck if we wanted to get something out of the season. And we went on a run of, I think, winning 8 of 10 A-League games for the back end of the year and salvaged something from the year. Whereas this year we picked up a lot of points in the first half of the season and, set ourselves up for the end of the season. And when we're playing, coming to the Champions League as well, you might be able to sort of juggle the squad a bit better than, if we needed to pick up pick up a lot more points than we need to. So, yeah, it's very pleasing, and, you know, we're setting ourselves up well at the moment.
You've been at Melbourne Victory a long time, Lee. Looking at the four or five attackers in front of you, and one of them is not even out there on the park at the moment in KSK Honda, Toivonen, Barbaroussis, Troisi and Tonis. Have you ever seen a better attacking front half of the Melbourne Victory?
I mean, we've always had, you know, kind of philosophically the club has always been to an attacking style club, and so we've always brought in great players over the years. But, yeah, I think, you know, the calibre, we've signed two players that have just gone to a World Cup before the start of this season. And you know, the likes of Terry and Costa are in some of the best form of their career as well. So that makes it a lot easier. And Carl Valeri's come into the team at the base of all that. And I think he's making their job a lot easier as well. And they can't be underestimated. It's a great combination, and we're very lucky to have everyone here.